You're listening to The Founders News,
your source for inspiration and insights into the vast world of entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Nathaniel Johnson, and we interview founders, CEOs, and world changers to get a better grasp of what it truly means to be a founder. Taking preconceived ideas into mind-boggling realities. But there's so much more than a podcast, it's a community. We empower startups with law, accounting, consulting, and more. So tune into the end of this episode to get involved with our partners, resources, and YFS as a whole.
Specializing in high-growth startups, Ventus Law serves a client base of 1,600 and growing, with expertise in corporate, commercial, and intellectual property laws. The firm collaborates with renowned accelerators such as Y Combinator and Startup Chile, reflecting its commitment to supporting innovation globally. Ventus Law distinguishes itself by avoiding unnecessary legal complexities and offering flexible fee structures. We sit down with Anil to discuss his journey to creating Ventus Law and the journey and obstacles that he took to becoming a founder.
All right, let's get started. So Anil, you know, founder manager of Ventus Law, did some bit of research and saw that, you know, you've worked in at least 19 years of law experience, just crazy because, you know, that's literally how old, you know, me and Sean are right now in college. You know, experience at Cooley, some of the big firms, and you then going on to your own, helping startups in Silicon Valley. But we want to go back, you know, wind the clock a little bit and talk about your childhood, you know, where you grew up, you know, was Silicon Valley kind of a, you know, ultimate destination you want to go to? You obviously wanted to also be an entrepreneur. So finding that middle ground between law, you know, which interest came first? Was it kind of the law space or the entrepreneurial space? And how it looked like for you growing up?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. This is exciting.
Yeah, we're excited.
Thank you. I grew up in Delhi in India. And I'll tell you, unfortunately, I have nothing to complain about. So in the sense that I can't tell you I had hardships and I had to overcome hardships. And that's what toughened me up and made me what I am. Unlike Elon Musk and all these other successful people that you think about. I had a pretty normal childhood, you know, we didn't worry about things. We grew up in a very unhappy sort of, you know, with friends and various things. But that also means I was not very ambitious, frankly, you know, so going to school was just going through a process and mostly fun, friendship, sports, a lot of sports. And that was really it. I stumbled into law when I became an adult. And I'm sure you guys are thinking about some of this as well, right? So what is it that you want to do? And at some point you start thinking about these things and you start the process of elimination, right? What are the things that you can't do, right? So I knew I could not be a doctor. I knew I couldn't be an engineer. So, you know, going through a list of things, I also somehow in the back of my mind knew that I wanted to have a good life. So I was not made out for charity or things that, you know, affect the earth and help other people, which I like to do, don't get me wrong, but...
Right. Good save.
Through a career in either politics or office or environmental or various other things. And frankly, a lot of these options were not even available at that time, right? It was also about survival, right? In the sense of my parents were fine, but they were not going to pay for... we were not wealthy. So I had to get something to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. That's how I stumbled into law as a default option that out of all the various professions I could think of, the one that I thought I could see myself doing and maybe becoming good at was law. So that's how I got into it. I've actually been practicing for more than 25, 28 years now. I started in India in the High Court, in Delhi High Court. And again, for those who have not been to India or not been to Delhi or not been to a court in India, it's quite an experience and very different from life here. It was a lot of just scrambling, putting things together. And even as lawyers, working on from real estate to investments, all sorts of different things. And India was also emerging as, you know, coming out of a socialist and the laws were changing. So trying to understand what was happening, the economy was we were emerging from really very close to bankruptcy to becoming a strong economy. This is 1995, 97, and at that time I again looked around and said, okay, this is interesting, but how do I grow? And India was becoming more open to global investments, and I realized that one way sort of to become stand out from other lawyers in India is to actually get a degree from the US, university in the US, and then go back and get a better job, right? I mean, the same company that would hire me at that time would have actually paid me a lot more, and my path to success would be faster if I had a US sort of it's a golden ticket, right? You stand out. So I came to Georgetown Law for my master's in law, and that was 1997. Frankly, again, not with a whole lot of thought into it, except that's what I wanted. And then plan was to go back and practice law in India and make more money in India.
Yeah.
And as I said, frankly, it was a very bad time for India, because India just as soon as I graduated with literally my father's 401k savings, you know, his old pension fund invested to pay for my tuition. And we didn't have scholarships for law students, foreign law students at that time. So the plan was, you know, I would get 1 year to work in the US, earn money, and then be able to go back and earn enough to pay back my father. But India just started a nuclear sort of, you know, test, and India was banned from any global transactions. There was a complete freeze in any transactions between the Western world and India. So there was really no job for me in the US, and I had to earn. I was desperate to earn money and hold on to doing some work in India, so in the US, so I could go back to India with some cash and some savings, and obviously some good experience that I could put on my resume. You know, again, I was this young kid with visions, but nothing substantive built in at that time.
Right.
So I was I networked very strongly. My professor at Georgetown had really liked me. We had very good interactions in class. So for any students out there, I would highly recommend getting good connection with your professors. And it's not just about the grades, but your personality and your intelligence and your passion for that subject, because those professors are network, right? They're, when they're interacting with you, they may be looking at also potential, if you're looking for law, for example, and that professor is a practicing partner at a law firm, that's a good opportunity for you to plug into. If you are doing an MBA and that professor is at a large, you know, consulting firm, a managing director at a consulting firm, they're probably looking at you as a potential candidate as well, not just the education or the academic sort of 1 hour that you're spending with them. So I got very fortunate. A professor of mine took interest in me and brought me into sort of as a mentee. And then he introduced me to another friend of his who was a partner at another firm, who then introduced me to a partner at Freshfields, which is a British law firm. And they were setting up offices in Washington, D.C., and that's how I got a job. So before that, my professor actually brought me in as a legal intern at the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, in the International Bureau. So I had interest in communication. India was just opening up its communication. There was a new Communication Act, and Indian communication mobile technology was the economy was going around, and that was supposed to be the big thing. And I jumped in, right? I became the de facto interest expert at the FCC for Indian regulations. And the reason that was because there was nobody else in FCC looking at Indian regulations. So the lawyers, the senior lawyers at the FCC International Bureau, when they had an issue with, or they got letters from India regulatory authorities on telecom, they turned to me, right? So again, the second piece of advice I would give to students is find a unique sort of niche that's unique to you and become an expert there. And obviously something that's going to grow in the future, right? So if you become the expert there, automatically doors will open up, right? People will turn to you for that expertise. Yeah. It could be a small thing, like Indian regulations in telecom was very small for the FCC, but it was all mine, right? So I was the expert, and everyone in the FCC knew that if they had a legal question on Indian telecom regulations, I was the guy. And I was this young kid from India, very little experience in the US, but I was the one.
Right. And I find irony in that, because you said like you were focused on this like individualistic almost approach to your career. And it's almost like you follow this route and then you can't even help but giving back to India and where you're from and people who look like you. So, I mean, you kind of got best of both worlds, I can imagine, working that international bureau.
More privileged and fortunate to be, you know, in that position to be able to help and give back. But right. Yes, that's how I got into some experience on my resume, which allowed me to work for Freshfields, which was this British firm and a magic circle firm. And I had my own personal assistant, you know, sitting outside my office. All of that, pretty cool.
Good perks, yeah.
Yes, yeah, all the perks of, you know, what you see on television. in that process, you know, I was bombarded by recruitment, you know, headhunters in Silicon Valley that would send me information about all the gold rush in Silicon Valley, and they said, hey, all you have to do is go up and you can be getting options and stock and very wealthy very quickly. So I decided to take a trip to Silicon Valley, met some cool people in different law firms. And frankly, I came on a Friday and met three different law firms. By Saturday, I had three different offers from three different law firms.
Wow.
Crazy times, you know, it was pretty crazy times. And I decided to join Cooley. And Monday morning, I went into my partner's office in Washington, D.C. And I said, I'm moving to Silicon Valley. Yeah. And he said, why would you do that? I said, I'll be working with startups. I'm not kidding. It's a true story. And he said, what does that mean? What do startups do? I said, I have no idea. But I decided to move. It was just instinctive. The environment was different. The people I connected with. I did see at that time some Indians had, you know, sold their companies. This is late 1999. So some Indians had sold their companies. I met some of them. I could see the start of something interesting, right? The Indian community was coming together. Technology was obviously big. A bunch of engineers were coming in from India to solve the Y2K. It probably before your time, but that was where the earth was going to be shattered because of the bug in the programming. And everything was supposed to shut down. It was called the Y2K. And there were tons of engineers being flown in from India to solve that Y2K problem. Of course, none of that happened, but it allowed, they opened up the door for technology to emerge. And these hundreds and thousands of engineers from across the world to come into Silicon Valley and sort of get different jobs. So I saw a rough sort of inkling of that, and I said, yeah, this is what I want to be part of, right? Again, with no idea what it means to me, but it was interesting. It was going to be big, and I wanted to be part of it. That was really my big idea, you know, my big sort of plan.
Yeah,
I started working with a law firm called Cooley Godbert, enjoyed it a lot, worked with startups, and I was thrown into, you know, the startup world and realized that, you know, working with early stage young entrepreneurs, it was my calling. You know, it was something, and it's not for everybody, right? Either you like it and you're passionate about it and you forget about everything else and everything sort of, you have to trust that you will make money, or you work at a big firm and make a lot of money and continue in that one steady job, right? This very different sort of world, as you know. And again, anyone looking to become a founder, that's the advice I would say. Be careful, right? What you wish for, because it's not going to be a cakewalk. It's not a standard 9-to-5. So you need to know what your personality, what you're suited for. There's nothing right or wrong, right? But if you're in the wrong track, then you'll never be able to achieve what you need to, and you'll never be happy enough to achieve what you need to, right? So I really thought I was in my track finally with all of these various experimentations, and I put everything into it. I worked my ass off literally and became sort of a good lawyer, a star in the firm, and started getting attracted, you know, from sort of learning and working with high quality clients. Then one of my clients I brought in was doing work in India. They were setting up a fab city in India, and I joined them to become general counsel, and had a lot of experience, great experience going back and forth between India and US. And then at some point, you know, for various reasons, that project didn't go through. We raised a bunch of money. We had great agreements with the governments in India, but it was a very, very tough project and that didn't go anywhere. So I needed to keep paying my mortgages. So I went back and joined another law firm in Silicon Valley called Orrick Herrington. Again, it's a global law firm. And then a couple of years later, I realized that, you know, I could do this on my own. And India, I saw again emerging as a tech powerhouse, not just for the development, but for products. And my experience in Silicon Valley and what was happening in India was very exciting. So I decided to go on my own. And 2009, I started my own firm, Inventus Law. And as you said, you know, that's given me an opportunity to work with early stage startups, many times students at universities, and I've been very privileged to work and advise and see the growth of these early stage startups from their ideas to successful companies, and increasingly giving back to India from that respect, also helping Indian entrepreneurs as they make their journey over to the US. And it's a very strange and very difficult world for them. I've lived that life, so I appreciate that. And wherever I can help and build the networks or be part of networks to help these founders, I'm always willing to and very excited.
Wow, I mean, yeah, that's more layered and detailed than we can imagine. And I mean, yeah, 2009 is, you know, it feels like it was yesterday, but you know, I was five in 2009, so it's simply not yesterday, and things have changed. So I guess, you know, a question we definitely want to hear the answer to is, what do you see now? You know, with the students that you work with, from, you know, the birth of Inventus all the way until, you know, the year of 2023 going on 2024. What have you seen? What type of clients are you dealing with? What are some anecdotes that have stuck out over the years? Yeah, we want to hear more.
Yeah, what do I see? Frankly, nothing changes. The way I've envisioned this, or I've experienced this, you know, it's like a big ball and people jump in, jump off. Sometimes they fall off and the ball keeps rolling and then it stops with the economy and the funding. And then some people jump off, investors jump back on, founders jump back on, and the ball keeps rolling, right? I mean, if you understand that way of what I'm describing. So substantively, obviously things change, you know, from cloud to computing to mobile to now AI. But it's all, if you think about, again, all of this is happening in one ball. The ball changes the shape, people jump in, do different things, but it keeps rolling, it stops, it starts moving forward. That's really in Silicon Valley and technology startup world, that's really what's happened, right? I mean, and I frankly think that's all we will keep seeing. It'll be more entrepreneurs coming in with greater ideas, new technologies. More people will jump into the new technologies, try to adapt what they've learned from old and then create new ones. Investors will try to catch up, try to understand the technology and what's working. And there'll be a trend, like AI is the trend now, and there'll be more investments directed towards that. And frankly, the smart entrepreneurs actually look at that, right? Look at where the trend is and look at what part of that trend is missing or an opportunity for them and jump onto that one opportunity, right? So you may want to do various other things, but if you're not thinking of AI as part of your startup in whatever form, you're probably going to miss out, right? You're going to miss out on building a business plan that investors would be attracted to. You will miss out on being able to build a team that you would require, and also miss out on the opportunities that have been created with other technologies that are using AI or have the ability to use AI for your own business. So it's a trend, but it's a real substantive opportunity as well.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely agree to that. And you know, something else that really just struck me is that you're working with these entrepreneurs and they're telling you how they're, you know, they're hungry, they're immersed in their business, they're trying to scale and, you know, hop on that ball as it continues to roll. But you're an entrepreneur yourself. I mean, even before starting Inventus Law, you had that same hunger. You were hustling the law space and founding Inventus Law. You know, you are the founder too of your own business. So do you kind of find it cool to relate to these founders when you're talking to these people building out their startups? You know, how does it kind of feel to also be in their shoes, but in a totally different niche?
Right, right. Or is this some guy who's like a fake guru, right? And we see that a lot, you know. People trying to help us, you know, it's just, you know, you got to be really selective who you can have join your team, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and again, if you ask me what are the biggest mistakes, they're not legal mistakes, they're hiring mistakes. You know, hiring the wrong person, bringing the wrong advisor, getting the wrong investor in the growth area, growth stage, those are the ones that actually kill a startup, not anything else. I mean, assuming there's a product and real technology or some sort of, you know, substantive value being created, the distinguishing feature between a successful and non-successful, everything being equal, is really their ability, the good founder's ability to hire the right talent at different stages and sort of build and grow with that. And one of the key elements of hiring that is not necessarily the degrees and where you come from, but how committed you are and how aligned you are in the mission of whatever you're trying to do together.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, with these startups too, you know, one thing I want to ask is, let's say, you know, all the founders and student founders listening to this right now, you know, what are, you know, Sean, how'd you talk about the general experiences, anecdotes, but specifically, what's like a, you know, a recurring theme or a tip that you've always seen, you know, whether that's, you know, if you're ever dealing with something on the legal side, to always consider this factor, or it's best to always have your business in this kind of structure. Like, what's a, you know, if there's one invaluable piece of information you can give to the audience right now, what would it be?
As the legal issues, like what is the main legal issue? As I said, hiring is certainly an issue for you to consider. But legal issue is, and I say this as something I believe in, it's a phrase, but good fences make good neighbors, right? So whatever you do, make sure you're putting a nice round fence around it, both boundaries and also who's in, who's out, in the form of legal documents, right? So if you, you know, Facebook is a good example. And if you haven't seen Social Network, you should. And, you know, how that emerged. And frankly, a lot of people, when I started the firm, I used to talk more deeply into it because I've seen it live out. I mean, it'd be, so basically when the company started, you know, there was obviously Mark Zuckerberg, who was going to be part of a company formed or started by other people. And someone or the other in the audience, when I say this, would always raise their hand and say, oh, Mark Zuckerberg did really well, right? And my point is that Mark Zuckerberg did really well, but there'll be three people who will actually, and Harvard, you know, your fellow Ivy Leaguers, will go to their grave believing that they started Facebook, you know, and the difference between their starting and owning Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg is a piece of paper that they should have got him to sign, right? I mean, that's my outside opinion. And that's an example or a lesson for startup founders, that build the right fence, you know, so make sure that if you're hiring someone to develop a piece of code or for a particular purpose, make sure that there's a proper written agreement around what that role is and what they get for it.
And I mean, yeah, great advice. You know, at this point, that should be, you know, number one, right? NDAs and MOUs, but kind of piggybacking off that, what are some of the biggest, you know, obstacles, you know, things that you're seeing in the realm of tech and compliance in this, you know, age of ML and AI? What do you see from the legal side that you want to advise a student audience?
Great question. And the second part of that, as I said, I'll say two things. One, legal. And the other thing is, obviously, as you start a company, always keep an eye on money, right? You need to start this company, assuming you're not doing something for, you know, nonprofit. If you're doing anything else that's for money, understand where the money will come from, right? Because at some point you will need it, right? And some point very sooner than you think. So whatever you're doing in the back of your mind in parallel, you should be thinking about, it has to emerge and merge with a point where when you need money and the money's available, right? It should match up. You cannot be at a point where you need money and the money's not there.
Yeah.
If you're there before and you're in a good spot, that's great to be, right? But certainly always be thinking about that. In terms of that specific question, it's a great question. And, you know, we obviously keep thinking about this. We are in a very sort of a very, I would say, what is the right word? Emerging, you know, situation, right? And it's evolving. And we saw what happened at OpenAI, right? With Sam's in and out. And I think there's also concerns about whether we will be able to control what's emerging out of it. None of us have visibility. And that basically means that there's fear, right? And fear will always drive more regulation, right? Because politicians love that, right? They love the fact that the general public is fearful, because it gives them an opportunity to do their job, which is to say, hey, we are here to protect you. So we should expect a lot more regulation coming up to, so again, if you are developing an AI product, you should know that there'll be a lot more regulation coming up on what you can do, what the technologies can do, certainly what you can do with your user data. So as an entrepreneur, even though these may be fine sort of legal issues, it's your responsibility to understand these things, right? It's your responsibility to understand how data privacy protection, the regulations relating to, you know, use of AI in different forms, all of that will evolve. So whatever newsletters you subscribe to, make sure you're also, you know, learning and keeping abreast of what's happening in the regulatory front. Because if you're building an AI product.
Yeah,
Certainly.
Most definitely. And yeah, kind of to just, you know, close things off in the sense of, you know, how kind of Inventus works with these startups and founders. Kind of want to ask you on the last front, you know, we're talking about compliance, we're talking about regulation and ultimately fear, right? I feel like one thing we see is that, you know, you mentioned your journey up until making an Inventus Law that you were hungry and you had this, maybe this fear and this pressure put on you, but you kind of pushed through that on the emotional side that led to the great successes that is Inventus Law today. So that's the final anecdote and note for these student founders that are, you know, hopping out of colleges and, you know, maybe they're tempted with, you know, working on this full time, or are they kind of going back into working these industry jobs? And you're also me kind of saying how you actually stepped out of the boat and did that in the law space. So what's your, I guess, final take and motivating words to these students now as they continue to build and make promising ventures of tomorrow?
Yeah, so I don't want to sound corny, but if you haven't heard this, the Rocky speech about life being tough, please listen to it. It's true, right? I mean, and especially if you're going to be a founder, right? Life will hit you hard and that's it. I mean, you can't complain. And I'd actually say that to sometimes, certainly my associates, but I say to them sometimes to the founders themselves that you don't get to complain because you have chosen this field, right? And you can always shut down and get a job, assuming you have a good degree and some level of experience. So if you are doing this, if you've decided to do this, right, stop complaining. I mean, it might take longer. It's also a marathon, right? Don't worry about what's happening around you. If your friends start a company and raise a bunch of money and you're not there yet, your race is not with that individual, right? Because there's tons of founders and tons of people becoming successful and you will have your time. Your race is with yourself. And at any given time, see where you are, right? So have a North Star, right? There should be a North Star for your life. There should be a North Star for your business venture. And make sure that wherever you're going off, that you go back to that North Star. So if you started your startup with a purpose of doing XYZ, that is your purpose, right? It doesn't matter what's happening around you. You have to be able to find a way to close out that noise and keep at it. Keep at it and keep at it. And yes, you will fail. And yes, people will leave you. And yes, you will struggle for money. All of that will happen, right? And that's just life hitting back at you. And the way winning is done is you have to go through it and go on the other side. Or you can quit. Mm-hmm. And go somewhere else. And with all of you with your degrees, that's never a problem. So you are still already ahead of everybody else who may not have the same opportunity of even getting a job. So you have a good backup plan.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, we're trying our best to, you know, act out that sentiment that you just left us with. But Anil Advani, Inventus Law, thank you so much for, you know, taking 25 minutes out of your Thursday afternoon. We're entirely incredible for, you know, the gems that you've dropped on us, but really more importantly to our student audience.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you guys can go online. Inventus Law is all over Google. We have you guys up on our site. You can get in contact with Anil and his team whenever you really need. But as he said, he's here to help not only us, but you guys as well. So Anil, thank you. Inventus, thank you. And until next time.
Until next time. Thank you so much.
Guys. Thanks for having me. Take care. Bye.
All right. Cool.
Bye.
All right. And yeah, that's about it.
And that's what we do, Anil. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting here and just like soaking it up. I mean,
that's great.
It's a lot different conversations than we usually have. So we're very thankful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure different than from what you would expect from a lawyer. So.
The
real takes, the real side of law.
Yeah. Also, no, first thing I was going to tell you, I actually had a student hit me up. It's a senior at Yale right now. She's working on a kind of biodegradable startup right now. She'd actually need some law help. So she was actually looking at the website, saw you guys, want to put me in contact if you'd be interested.
Sure. Yeah, no, go ahead and make the introductions. Please do that. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, of course.
That's what we're here for, right? I mean, especially.
Yeah, no, literally, right? Yeah. The first, you know, kind of authentic traffic. So it was really good. Yeah,
great.
Definitely.
That'd be great. And also, don't forget, whenever you guys start, right? I mean, I want to be the first check for that and for that start, for that venture.
Yeah, no, man. I know we talked about that like a week ago, but yeah, definitely in the works right now. We're trying to figure out our whole like business operations side of how it's going to flow, but we'll definitely be in contact. Definitely want you there as the first one, by all means.
Yes, fantastic. Excellent. All right, guys, that's it.
That was amazing to know. We'll be in contact. I guess you'll see my face a few more times.
That's good. Look forward.
I'm glad that we could hop on now and kind of kick things off like this. Excellent. A lot of good stuff cooking right now. Yeah. We're going on break. Finals is wrapping up, so
yeah. All the best.
We'll have some time to get ready for the next year. Thank you, Anil. Talk soon.
Excellent. All right.
All right. Peace.
Hey y'all, Sean here with a quick sign off. Thanks again for tuning into this episode. If you're a founder, entrepreneur, or world changer of any sort, be sure to check out some of our partners to accelerate your business ventures. Whether it's consultation with Adventist Law, bookkeeping and ideation with Mighty Startup, accounting or advisory with AKM Global, or even tax help with Heartbeat and Partners, YFS will continue to build and support a strong community of student founders and entrepreneurs. And with our partners, Speaker Network, will continue to grow and accelerate your ventures. Peace.